From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. With a job comes a salary, hopefully benefits, and hopefully some job satisfaction, pride in your work. But many Americans work long hours with no overtime pay. Now the White House says it's going to change that. Give them a pay bump or give them overtime. This hour On Point, the president's new rules on overtime pay. You can join us on air or online. Do you make less than $50,000 a year and get no overtime? Have you been promoted to management to avoid having to pay you overtime? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first from Arlington, Virginia, is Marianne Levine. She's a labor and employment reporter for Politico and has been following the story. Marianne, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
So in the coming months, millions of American workers could become newly eligible for overtime pay. Explain these new rules.
Yeah, so basically the Obama administration this week is rolling out a new rule that's going to raise the threshold for overtime pay. So what that means is right now, as a salaried worker, if you make less than $23,660, you're entitled to overtime, and that's below the poverty line for a family of four. But if you make more than that, you are not eligible for overtime. So what this rule is going to do is it's going to raise the salary threshold to $50,440. So if you're a salaried worker and you make less than that, you will be entitled to overtime.
So today, the only way you're automatically guaranteed time and a half pay after a 40-hour work week is if you earn less than $23,660 a year, right? And that's
exactly
below the poverty line for a family of four. And now the Labor Department is saying we're going to raise that threshold to about $50,000 a year.
Yes, that's correct. And the motivation behind that is the threshold for overtime has only been updated once since 1975, and it was not indexed to inflation. So bringing it up to the $50,000 level would bring coverage of salaried workers to the same levels as they were in 1975 or to similar levels.
Here's President Obama in a press conference on Tuesday with the president of Brazil, Dilma Rousseff. He's speaking here about some of the goals he has for the remainder of his presidency, including the implementation of these overtime rules.
You know, the list is long, and my instructions to my team and my instructions to myself have always been that we are going to squeeze every last ounce of progress that we can make when I have the privilege of, as long as I have the privilege of holding this office. We announced overtime rules that I'm going to be talking about more this week. That's going to give a raise to 5 million people potentially in this country who really deserve it.
President Obama issued the new regulation. Marianne, he didn't need congressional approval for this?
No, he doesn't. This is fully within the Labor Department's regulatory authority. But that doesn't mean, though, that this isn't going to go down without a fight from congressional Republicans. There's definitely still ways to try to attempt to block this rule. And I think that based on the track record of how Republicans in Congress have responded to some of the Obama administration's other labor priorities, and we can definitely expect there to be a congressional fight. But yes, in short, the Labor Department does have the authority to do this.
So everyone assumes that this might mean bigger paychecks, but there are exceptions to this, right? Explain that.
Yeah. So, they're saying that this could mean bigger paychecks, but this is also, you know, there's some businesses that are saying that, you know, there are some businesses that are saying that this is going to reduce the number of hours worked. It's going to reduce benefits. That's sort of what the Chamber of Commerce and the National Restaurant Association and some other business groups are arguing. And also, this will in theory reduce hours worked. And I think that's something that both sides acknowledge. But it could also create more jobs also, since employers will be less likely to want to pay workers' time and a half pay. So it definitely remains to be seen how this rule is actually going to play out.
Well, also, now a worker can be given limited managerial duties, right? Can be promoted to supervisor, and you immediately become ineligible for overtime.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so another aspect of this regulation is they're going to look at the so-called white-collar exemption. So right now, a worker can be classified as a salaried worker if you have some form of managerial managerial duty, quote unquote, or an administrative duty. And what we've, what some are saying that we're seeing is a lot of, you know, a lot of managers in stores, they'll be classified as under this white collar exemption and not entitled to overtime pay, even though they're making $30,000 a year.
So here's some sound from Kassan Marcoux. He worked at a Dunkin' Donuts as a manager. In an interview with PBS NewsHour, he said that he worked 75 hours a week and did not get any overtime pay. Bottom line, he was making less than his coworkers.
I'm making only $9, $10 an hour, which is that's even lower than the regular employees what they are making.
Hmm. So, Marianne Levine, the minute you label your worker a manager or a supervisor now, you exempt them from this rule. That's what the president's trying to change.
Yeah, and he's and right now he hasn't offered any specific changes, but they're definitely soliciting questions from the public about how to change this exemption so that this doesn't happen and that they can prevent worker misclassification.
You talked about reaction from congressional Republicans on this. What's the reaction from business groups?
Business groups are not happy about the overtime rule. They're saying that it's gonna force a lot of employers to move people move salaried workers onto hourly work. They're saying it's gonna reduce hours and that it's gonna reduce benefits for employees because they won't reap the benefits of being paid a salary, which. So basically, business groups are not happy about this, and I think we can expect some significant protests in the months to come.
All right. Barring that, when does this take effect?
They're aiming for 2016, so before Obama leaves office.
Marianne Levine, she's a labor and employment reporter for Politico. She's speaking to us from Arlington, Virginia. Marianne, thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Joining me now from Washington, Ross Eisenbray. He's a vice president of the Economic Policy Institute, a liberal think tank. He is also co-author with economist Jared Bernstein of the 2013 paper that the Obama administration's new overtime rules are based on. Ross, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me, Jane.
So tell us the story of how this law came about.
Well, the law is actually from 1938. During the Great Depression, the Fair Labor Standards Act was passed because there was so much unemployment at the same time that there were many millions of people who were working 60 and 70 hours a week. The president and the Secretary of Labor said, we need to have a better distribution of this work. So they passed the Fair Labor Standards Act, which says employers have to pay time and a half overtime, 150% of the regular rate for workers who work more than 40 hours in a week. That shifted a lot of work from those those sort of overworked people to the unemployed and to people who are working part-time who needed more hours. Mm. And so that's exactly what this rule is going to do. It's going to cover 15 million more people than are currently covered by the salary threshold. And the Retail Federation, for example, has done a report, and they said in their own report, this is not going to cost jobs. This is going to create jobs, because if you have a manager who is working 60 hours a week, those extra 20 hours that are uncompensated now will have to be given to somebody. Someone is going to have to do that work now and be paid for it. The employer is going to shift the work from the higher paid manager to hourly workers, part-time workers who really need the work.
So how did you calculate what the new thresholds will be, or how did the administration? I mean, they based apparently these rules on the paper that you wrote in 2013. I mean, how do you calculate what these new thresholds will be from $23,000 a year to about $50,000 a year?
Well, we came to the same level, but we came to it a little differently. We just looked at, in 1975, what was the level? That was the last time that it was the Labor Department actually raised the level to try to keep up with inflation. We said, what would be the inflation-adjusted level now? And it was about $50,000. So that's what we proposed. The Labor Department made a calculation that they thought the right level was that 40% of the salaried workforce ought to be guaranteed overtime pay, regardless of what their duties were, because and that's important to point out that even if you make more than the salary threshold, you could be entitled to overtime pay. This is just the level at which you're guaranteed overtime regardless of what your job duties are. Mm-hmm. And we're only talking about salaried workers because hourly workers are all entitled to overtime pay already. So the rule is that above the threshold, which will eventually, we hope, be around $50,000, then you look at the employee's duties. And if you're just a secretary but you're making $55,000 a year, you're still entitled to overtime pay. It's only a small – it's supposed to be in the original law a small group of the bosses, the managers, the administrators, and the professionals who are exempt from overtime pay.
Well, we know what congressional Republicans say about this. The Obama administration really felt the clock ticking on this one. I mean, fairly controversial in some circles. Does it expect to be challenged in court?
I don't really see that there's a viable court challenge. This is completely within the Secretary of Labor's authority. What they're doing is not really even restoring this to the level that it was in the Ford administration and the Nixon administration, you know, back in those days of Republican presidents. Back then, almost two-thirds of the salaried workforce was automatically entitled to overtime pay. Even with this change, the Obama administration only intends to cover 40%. So this is well within the historical norms. It's really just trying to recover what has been lost over the last 40 years.
And this is a very different conversation from the push for higher minimum wages that we're seeing across the country.
Well, it targets a different workforce. This is sort of lower middle class people who can now worked very long hours. I've talked to a dollar store manager who sometimes for 4 weeks in a row would work 90 hours a week. That's not really a middle class lifestyle, but that's who this is aimed at.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about the workplace and the middle class and the White House new rules on overtime pay. My guest this hour, Ross Eisenbray, Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute and one of the people who convinced the White House to call for the new overtime rules. Ross, what about that? Employers talking about lowering the amount of hours for their workers so they actually don't have to pay the overtime.
Well, there might be a little bit of that, but, this is a rule that we've had since 1938. And looking back in history, we tried to see evidence of that being done before, and we couldn't find any evidence that employers did that. It's a hard thing for an employer to actually lower someone's salary and expect them to stay there and keep working. As the economy improves and people have more job prospects, more opportunities, they'll leave an employer who mistreats them. In that way. So I don't think it's going to happen. The Retail Federation, really, I think it's important that their own analysis is that this is going to create tens of thousands of jobs in their industry alone. I think overall across the economy, it's likely to produce several hundred thousand jobs.
Are there particular sectors? You mentioned retail. Are there particular sectors of the labor market where these overtime rules will be most felt? I mean, earlier you said these new rules would target a different set of workers, a lower middle class set of workers. I mean, how do you see what sector do you see this targeting?
Well, it's business services, it's finance, the insurance industry has been sued many times because they take advantage of these duties tests to try to exempt workers who really are not the administrators or professionals who the rule was meant to target, the exemptions were meant to target. But it's, it's office work generally. One thing Marianne said that I think we need to correct is that if you end up making more than this new threshold, you might still be entitled to overtime pay. It's just that you're automatically entitled on the basis of your salary. But let's say you're a paralegal working in a law firm and you make $60,000.
Mm-hmm.
The rules say you're not in the exempt category. You're not a professional. You're not – the professional is the lawyer. You're not an administrator, and you're not an executive. You're not managing something. You're just doing research and helping out an attorney. So the rules are below the threshold, you're automatically entitled. Above the threshold, we look at your duties and determine whether you're in this exempt category.
Got a lot of great calls here. Let's get a couple in. Mark in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark. Glad you called. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a truck driver by trade, and
okay.
I'm an hourly truck driver employed by a local company. This new ruling that the White House is putting out it's not going to really affect me anything anyway, because there's a law that's on the books from 1935, which is called the Motor Carrier Act of 1935. It's been on the books all this time, and it exempts me from getting any overtime pay whatsoever.
Hmm.
I make an hourly wage. Last year alone, I put in an average of 100 hours every pay period.
Hmm.
And I still only got straight pay for that because of that act, that law that's still active.
Mark, thank you. Let's take that to Ross Eisenbray. What do you make of that? Is that just this particular industry?
It's not just that particular industry, but he's certainly right. The Motor Carrier Act and many other transportation laws exempt people in the transportation sector, merchant seamen, people in the airline industry. Certain people in the airline industry are exempt. Teachers are exempt. They can work as many hours as their employer wants them to. They're never entitled to overtime pay under the Fair Labor Standards Act. So, out of a workforce of 140 million people, I think something on the order of 110 million are covered by this. But it isn't everybody.
Ross, hold on a moment. Let's hear from one businesswoman who's trying to figure out what the new labor rules will mean for her company. Katie Tyler is founder, owner, and CEO of Tyler 2 Construction. She joins us from Charlotte, North Carolina. Katie, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Jane. Glad to be here.
So what was your initial reaction to these new rules by the Obama administration?
Well, anytime there's a new rule that comes out that infects me as an employer, the wire waves go wild. It's going to be great for employees. It's going to be horrible for business and ways in and out. The reality is as a business owner, I've got to look at my bottom line to make sure I'm profitable. And as these rules come down the road, make adjustments as necessary to ensure that that's the end result.
What kind of adjustments do you mean?
Well, for instance, if I've got a salaried person whom I choose to pay a salary and they work 42 hours a week, I can now say I either pay them 2 hours of overtime or I change them back to an hourly rate rather than taking them off salary. So if they take 2 hours off in the morning to go to a doctor's appointment, which I don't keep track of now as a salaried employee, they go to hourly and they are dinged the 2 hours for the doctor's appointment but pay 2 hours of overtime on another. So it's a balancing act. That's one choice. The other, obviously, is to bump them up above the threshold so that there is no mandatory overtime.
Well, to say this sensitively and gently, are you trying to sort of work around this in some ways?
Well, it's not a matter of working around it. Again, it's just a matter of looking at the bottom line and saying, this is going to have to be passed on to my employees or to my clients.
Hmm.
So, fortunately, 90% of my employees make over that threshold. I've got a couple who don't.
Mm-hmm.
They, for the most part, don't work overtime. But there are occasions when we've got a job that's got to get out the door or a proposal that's got to go out that would require that.
Yeah.
Being salaried, I like to think that we balance that out. Frankly, I think it's going to affect my subcontractors more than
a little bit more.
Yeah.
Let me get Dave in here from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Dave. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I am glad to be here. Your last guest, I agree wholeheartedly with her assessment. We are a subcontractor. We handle logistics, endpoint logistics for our companies. And it is as she said, with all due respect to your guest, he seems to be speaking from a theoretical and academic viewpoint, which does not very, very rarely tie in with the real world. These won't lead to new jobs because the time increments that we generally find are 15 minutes here, 30 minutes there, 2 hours here, and at the end of the pay period, you look and you see a block of time, which may be 16, 17 hours, but there's no way you would hire a second individual to come in and work 15 minutes here, 17 minutes there.
Yeah.
That's just impractical for the person, for the company, and for the individual who would ostensibly be hired to fill that position.
Dave, thank you so much. It's complicated, Ross Eisenbray. You know, works in theory, Dave says, but in the real world, not so easy.
Well, you know, I'm the manager, the vice president of a small business myself. Our institute has about 40 employees. So, you know, I know about how you have to arrange your workforce to get the work done. But the fact of the matter is that for 50, 60 years, we had these rules and small businesses lived with them. Everybody lived with them. and the vast majority of salaried workers were covered by these rules, and the economy was very strong. We now are in a place where workers' wages are falling, where entry-level wages, even for college-educated people, are lower than they were in 2000. And, you know, if we keep going in that direction, small businesses are going to have a harder and harder time finding customers because, you know, you can work people, you know, 2 hours doesn't make much of a difference, but working somebody 20 or 30 hours extra a week without giving them any more compensation means that they're not going to have the purchasing power, or someone else isn't going to have a job or the extra work to have the purchasing power to support small businesses.
Katie Tyler, back to you as a small business owner. In the long term, do you see this as good for you and your employees, or you know, how do you rate this?
Yeah, in the long term, I think it is good. Any time you can get more money in the pockets of your employees and they're happy about where they're working, it's better off for me and for everybody. It's just going to mean ultimately somebody's got to pay, especially in retail. The prices are going to go up. And it's not a level playing field. Something's got to give somewhere, and prices have to go up somewhere.
Katie Tyler, founder, owner, and CEO of Tyler 2 Construction. Katie, good luck to you. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jane. Glad to be with you.
Thank you. Let me bring another voice in now. Ross, somebody who does not think your plan is a good one, or the president's plan as well. Michael Strain is a labor economist and a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Michael Strain, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Your reaction to how these new rules on overtime will affect the U.S. economy?
Well, I'm concerned about them. As you say, I think that these sorts of interventions are certainly well-intentioned. It's certainly the case that many of the people who will be affected by this policy have been struggling for quite some time, and that's something that policy should address and something that we should all be concerned about. I just worry about what the real-world effects of a policy like this will be in terms of, you know, the things that you guys have already been discussing, cutting people's hours, whether firms will try to replace workers with machines and increase the pace of the automation of jobs, whether firms will, you know, switch people their compensation packages around in order to try and get around this. And I think we just have to be realistic about what's actually going to happen when regulations like this are put in place. Mm. It's a huge increase in the threshold exemption. I mean, it's a very, very large increase, and that's something to keep in mind.
I think there are many people who would argue that many employers are already trying to get around this. You're speaking with the Huffington Post in March, President Obama foreshadowing yesterday's announcement, saying that companies have skirted basic overtime pay laws too long and that many of them are playing with words to avoid paying their workers what they deserve.
Calling somebody a manager when, you know, they're stocking groceries and getting paid, you know, $30,000 a year, those folks are being cheated.
And here's former retail manager Joe Garagosian, who spoke with NPR Scott Horsley yesterday, saying that he was excited to get his first job as a supervisor until he realized that he was missing out on a lot of overtime pay.
I'm almost living the American dream in some sense, but when you get down to the nitty-gritty and you really start realizing that it really wasn't much to be a salaried person, it ended up doing me worse.
Michael Strain, your response.
Well, I think that you know, that those clips actually make the point. When you have a salary threshold that's in the 20s for exemption, you're going to push that up into the 50s. If employers are engaging in this kind of behavior with such a low threshold, you know, imagine the negative effects that are going to happen if the threshold nearly doubles. You know, and I think in addition. I don't know if it's so much playing with words. I mean, it is the case that a lot of managerial and professional roles still involve, you know, nitty gritty, you know, work, and especially in industries like retail. And it's, you know, hard to demarcate these things as cleanly and neatly as supporters of this proposed regulation make it seem.
Let's get Maggie in here from Council Bluffs, Iowa. Maggie, thanks for waiting. Welcome to On Point.
Yeah, hi, Jane. Thank you for taking my call. I am a sales consultant for an unnamed company and was hired with a $30,000 base. I do receive commission, but it varies from month to month. My job description when I was hired said that it was required that I work 45 plus hours a week. Most of the time, I'm putting in between 50 and 60 hours a week. There are slow weeks, of course, but most of the time, it's, you know, a good 50-hour work week. I'm just kind of curious how that's going to affect my situation and the situation of those like me, and I can take my answer off the air.
Maggie, thank you so much. Ross Eisenbray, how will it affect Maggie? And then Michael Strain, how you think it will affect Maggie?
Well, she's an inside sales worker, I take it, not somebody who's going door to door, and because they have a whole different set of rules. But if in her situation, if she isn't paid $50,000 or more, she will get overtime for those additional hours, and her pay will go up. I mean, her employer is going to have to decide: do I want to pay her extra, or do I want to give those hours to somebody else, or do I just want to raise her salary to what is really the professional level, or you know, that this rule is aimed at? You shouldn't be exempt from overtime unless you really are in this category of people who the employer so values that they don't want to keep track of their time and just have them work independently. But, you know, she should get paid more. She's working 50 hours a week. She should be paid for every hour she works.
Michael Strain, any downsides to these new rules for someone like Maggie?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, if you think about the way her pay is structured, her employer says, okay, I'm going to give you a guaranteed $30,000 a year. You get that no matter what. And then I'm going to incentivize you by giving you a commission-based compensation scheme for the actual work you do and your performance. That gives her a strong incentive to do well and to bring in business because she gets a share of what she brings in, and that allows the employer to take risks on hiring people because their maximum exposure, even if someone makes no sales, is only $30,000 a year. If you say that, you know, that now this firm has to keep track of how many hours she works and has to pay her overtime for work above 40 hours a week, then you're giving that firm a strong disincentive from making these kinds of jobs available because you're increasing the exposure the firm has. And I don't know if it'll affect her personally. I mean, she might personally be better off, but we have to think about the unseen consequences of people who don't get hired and firms who change the way that they structure their workforce.
Ross, your response?
Well, you know, this is exactly what is wrong with a lot of the conversation about labor policy today. 20, 30 years ago, she would have been guaranteed, in inflation adjusted terms, her salary would have been, if it had been what it is today, she would have been protected by the threshold. She would have been guaranteed overtime. But because the threshold has fallen so far, you know, the employer thinks that $30,000 is a base salary that it can get away with paying her. The labor standards should be raised up so that $50,000 is the base salary if you're going to treat people, if you're going to own their time and expect them to work endless hours for you, you need to pay them a base salary that is at least a middle class salary.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're looking at how workers are going to start earning overtime pay, with some exceptions and the impact on workers, businesses, and the economy as a whole. You can join the conversation. Is this a good idea or just more government interference? My guest this hour, Michael Strain, labor economist and a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Ross Eisenbray, vice president of the Economic Policy Institute. So many callers here and comments online. From John, he says, this is yet again another attack by the D.C. central planners against small community businesses. And at the same time, it's a gift to the Walmart and Costcos in our country, who will gain even more market share as the break-even point for small format is raised yet again. Here's Carl in Nashville, Tennessee. Carl, welcome to On Point.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I've been listening to the show, and everybody keeps saying it's complicated. It's not very complicated. This is how easy it is. Thank you, President Obama, for, in fact, giving 5 million of my fellow citizens a raise. I will pay a little extra. I'm okay with that. And furthermore, why are we even listening to the other side of this conversation? Because the other side have told us, you know, we were going to have death penalties if we have Obamacare. The other side told us that we should let GM go bankrupt. And I'm living proof here in Middle Tennessee. We have a GM plant that was closed under President Bush, but was reopened because President Obama had foresight enough to say, yes, we need to keep GM, and we don't need to let them go bankrupt.
Carl, do you own your own business?
I do own my own business, and before I started my business, I worked in the restaurant business.
Mm-hmm.
You have no idea how many lower middle-class people this is going to help. This mm-hmm. is going to hit them right in the pocketbook, because I had friends of mine who became managers mm-hmm. of restaurants that I worked in and saw that they were being worked 70, 80 hours a week.
Without any overtime.
And it was like, well, why should I? I'm going to go back just being a regular worker. And a lot of people did that and then take advantage of moving up the managerial ladder because of this. This is a wrong that had been right by the President of the United States. And
Carl,
you have people, you know, naysayers again.
All right, let's turn to Michael Strain. Carl, I so appreciate your call. Are you a naysayer, Michael Strain? Carl says, boy, I've seen it in action. This is going to help lower middle class folks.
Well, so I certainly think that Carl is correct that our public debate about economic policy could have been more sober and serious during the Obama presidency. So I you know, don't want to disagree with him about that. That may or may not make me a naysayer about this. I mean, I think it will help the people who it helps, and that's something important to acknowledge. I think it is also important to acknowledge that no one, the President of the United States, the U.S. Congress, the Department of Labor, big business owners, no one in the country can just wave a wand and create surplus where it didn't exist. And so the fact that it will make some people better off usually means that some people will be made worse off by it. And the question, as always, is one of balancing those trade-offs. And in my judgment, at this time, given the medium-term trajectory of the labor market, given where the labor market is right now in terms of its weakness, now is not the time to erect further barriers on employing lower middle-class people.
Let's face it, these rules cover a lot of folks here. I'm looking at a list of salaried employees across the country. Human resource director in Newport News, Virginia, $45,000 a year. In Ohio, intervention specialist, $33,000 a year. In Boise, a warden's assistant, $39,000 a year. In Georgia, medical support assistant, $34,000. 911 dispatcher in Kansas City, Missouri, $49,000 a year. Ross Eisenbray, that's a wide swath of America. You know, who does various work.
Yeah, there are about 15 million salaried workers who are going to benefit from this rule. And, you know, the important thing to remember is that we had these rules. They've been eroded away, but we had these rules at a time when small business was a bigger share of the economy than it is now, in a pre-Walmart economy where, you know, small businesses thrive. So this is not something that's targeted at them, or there's no reason to think it's going to hurt them. And it will actually create employment. This is something I really want your listeners to understand. The National Retail Federation, the lobbying group for the retail industry, in a report said this will not cost jobs, it will create jobs. And they
they had a figure of even if the threshold were raised a little less than the president proposes, it would create 76,000 jobs in their industry alone. Mm. So this is not a job killer by any means.
Here's Mark in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Mark. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple questions, and I missed the first part of the broadcast, but you know, I work with a group of professionals, most of whom are engineers and are not administrative, are not managerial, that have just tasks given to them to do a project. And in my personal case, I'm on the road a lot, I'm driving a lot, I'm mm-hmm. working 14-hour days. I don't know, I don't understand how this might affect someone like me. That's my first question. And my second question is, if it does positively, I mean, I work for like a $500 million company. So if it does affect me and I want to lobby for that in our own company, because I know our company won't do it automatically, can you be terminated for asking for that? So those are my two questions. Thank you.
Mark, thank you. Michael Strain, what do you say?
Well, I don't know exactly how it will affect him. I mean, as we discussed earlier, there are, you know, still exemptions, and if he said I didn't catch what industry he was in, I think and I'm not a lawyer either, but I think if this regulation were to come to pass and he were to request that it be enforced, certainly no punitive action should be taken against him by his company.
Stephen in Savannah, Georgia. Hi, Stephen. Welcome to On Point.
Hello. How are y'all?
Hi. Fine. Go ahead.
I'm a business owner, and I would love to give my employees more money. But I think the one thing that everybody is missing here is that the economy is not that great. I mean, anybody who believes that the current unemployment is where it is crazy. I see it. The government actually, business owners are making so much money. I promise you that if I tell some of my people that, look, I can't do it, I'm going to have to let you go, they will tell me, don't worry about it, just please don't make me lose my job. Mm. That's the reality that is not being discussed from a business standpoint.
Stephen, thank you very much. From Savannah, Georgia, here's Heather in Oklahoma City. Heather, welcome to the program.
Hi, Jean.
Hi.
I actually work for a government just outside of Oklahoma City, a rural government. And one of the issues that we've had is we have about 35 different agencies, and each one of those directors are considered white-collar workers. And in some cases, those directors make less money than their less skilled, less educated staff, because we are classified as white-collar workers, even though you might be making $38,000 a year, $42,000 a year, but you don't, and you're working an 80-hour week, which you may not end up making as much as your staff. And so I didn't know if we automatically will be included, even though we're considered white-collar staff. That's my question.
Mm. Heather, thank you. Ross Eisenbray?
Well, that's exactly who this is aimed at. And the previous caller, who was an engineer, engineers are exempt, but if he's making less than $50,000 a year, just like the caller who just called in, they will be automatically entitled to overtime pay. That's exactly who this is aimed at, people who are currently classified as executives, as administrative employees, and are not getting overtime. If they make less than $50,000 under this, that's the end of the story. They are entitled to overtime pay.
And yet, Michael Strain, what are some of the workarounds for employers that you're talking about? Lowering base pay to offset any overtime? You know, maybe you limit hours? Boss sends you home after 8 hours rather than pay overtime? What are some of the things that you're worried about?
Well, yeah, certainly those. I also think, as was previously mentioned, that some people who are close to the threshold will get a raise. So, you know, a firm will say, okay, you're now making $51,000 a year, and you can, you know, keep doing all the overtime. You know, whether that makes that person better off, I think is a subjective judgment. You know, I think the thing that I'm most worried about is where the labor market is headed, and we know that wages have been stagnant. We know that the threats of globalization and automation are real, and they've been reshaping the labor market for decades, and they are, by all accounts, going to continue to do that. And so I think what we need from the government is to decrease the cost of hiring workers in this group, while at the same time helping those workers to make ends meet and to make sure that, that work pays. This policy doesn't do that. This policy pretends like we're still in a world where everybody is productive and there are no massive threats to employment among these groups of workers, and where the argument is about how to divide up the pie between business owners and workers, and I think that's just not the world we're in and not where we're headed.
Let me get another call in here, another listener from Detroit, Michigan. Augustine is on the line. Augustine, welcome to On Point.
Hey, Jane, how are you?
Hi,
thanks
fine.
For
go
having
ahead.
Me on air.
Sure.
So I'm calling because I'm hearing a lot of opposition to having workers get overtime pay. And the workers this most affects is, people that make under $50,000, people that actually really need the money. So I'm a professional in the medical field. My base pay is $150,000 a year. And my work is only 40 hours a week. So anytime I get paid, anytime I do work more than that, I get paid. So I don't understand the opposition from a lot of people, and including really small businesses, because if you expect people to work and don't pay them, that's slave labor. I mean, we like to say, well, this is what the job entitles, but you cannot have someone working for free, because if I go to the hospital and they told me to work for free, I'm not going to do that. I can afford to do that. But whereas a lot of other people who really need the money and who really don't have any other options need such kind of tools to protect them, because there are some small businesses that are, that take care of their workers, but there are a lot of businesses, corporations that do not. And
Augustine,
there's a lot of – sure.
No, thank you very much for the call. I've got another one to get in here. Let's go to Jason in Nashville, Tennessee. Jason, welcome to On Point.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Fine. Go ahead.
Good. I'm a regional manager for a large Fortune 500 retail chain, and I've got 16 managers that would be impacted by this. And generally, we don't work them more than 44, 45 hours a week. I don't like to see that. I know that's not the case in a lot of other retail industries. But what will happen, the unintended consequence, is that they'll just get capped at 40 hours, and those employees will just have to bring in lower paid people to fill in the gaps. And that's the unintended consequence. I think this is just a token gesture legacy piece. I mean, it sounds nice, but it's not going to change anything. Whoever's that guy that was saying dividing up the piece of the pie, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Jason, thank you. I'll let you respond, Ross Eisenbray. Is that a real risk here?
Well, that's actually what this law is intended to do. He just said they'll be reduced from 45 to 40 hours a week, and lower paid people will pick up the work. That is exactly what this is intended to do. And I'd just like to do a reality check on something that Michael said. We have the highest profits in America in history right now. Businesses are doing well, even if the workers aren't doing very well. Their wages are stagnating. The argument that we'll be able to hire more people if we lower the wages of people, make them work longer without paying them, this is not a good recipe for an economy. This is not... The economy is supposed to work for the great mass of working people, and you don't get there by cutting wages, by working people 20, 30 extra hours a week without paying them. That's a recipe for long-term disaster.
Anna is in Hudson, Massachusetts. Hi, Anna. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm calling because I work in education. I'm considered a professional with my master's, and I only work, I only work 39 weeks a year. So I wonder if that sort of detail is going to be involved in this law or not.
Anna, thanks. Ross?
It's determined on a weekly basis whether you're a profession, whether your salary meets the test is actually, it will be $970 a week. If you make more than that, then you're subject to these duties tests. If you make less than that, you'll be automatically entitled to overtime pay. But a lot of people in education are exempt from this. Teachers, administrative staff in in schools, a lot of them are not just not covered by the law.
Let's wrap up here in our final minute, Michael Strain. Tie this together, this conversation, a lot of pieces to it. What's the impact of this long term, would you say, on the American worker, on the American economy?
Well, I think it's hard to say, and I think we've been hearing some of that confusion. I mean, if the point of this is to increase people's pay, that's not going to happen if firms cut their hours below the overtime threshold. If the point of this is to spread jobs around, that's not going to happen if firms just say, okay, I'm going to pay you overtime. And so I think, you know, a lot of these policies are well-intentioned, and certainly the government needs to be doing more to help workers in this group. Mm-hmm. But it's just hard to turn a lever in Washington, D.C. and make things like that happen.
Ross Eisenbray, how do you see it?
Well, I think it's a guaranteed win-win. Either the people who are salaried now and not being paid for their overtime will get paid for it, or their hours will be reduced and their salaries will still be their salaries, and the work will be shifted to people who really need the work, part-timers and people who will be hired. It's a definite win-win.
Ross Eisenbray, Vice President of the Economic Policy Institute. Ross, thank you very much for your insight today.
Thank you, Jane.
Michael Strain, labor economist and a resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute. Michael, thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
You can continue the conversation, listeners, and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, On Point, a big proactive look at the sophisticated online efforts of ISIS to recruit and lure Westerners to their cause. That's tomorrow. I'm Jane Clayson for now, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point.